Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 47 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Anderson of Free Kittens Movie Guide. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Oh, happy to be back for this second minute, or 47th minute, excuse me.
Well, it's both. It's your second minute, and it's the movie's 47th minute. So yes. All right. So minute 47 begins with Green continuing with his tale, and ends with Garber trying to once again contact the train. So we left things off yesterday with. Both Mr. Blue and Mr. Green giving us a little bit of information as to who they might possibly be, but we're never 100% sure if either of them are telling the truth or not. No. The irony is based on what we said yesterday, I personally believe that Mr. Blue is completely lying about everything, and that Mr. Green is only lying about the fact that you know, that he was innocent. I think the story is true. Because again, I think it goes back to the fact that Mr. Green, since he's not a professional criminal, he doesn't necessarily have the knack for trying to fake it. You know, yeah. To give himself some sort of backstory or whatever it is. That's what I think. But again, we will never know. It's all supposition. Hoping that we figured these things out. That's what it comes down to. All right. So the way things continue here is that Mr. Green says they tried to pin the evidence on me, but they couldn't. But they didn't find a thing. He says to him, "You're innocent?" He says, "Of course I was innocent. You think I'd do a thing like that? What's the matter with you?" And Mr. Blue just laughs. Which he's basically saying, okay, you can delude yourself. You're right now here in the middle of a hijack. You've joined a hijack. Yeah. Why would I believe that you wouldn't be the guy running drugs, the motorman running drugs up up and down Manhattan.
It's the only time Mr. Blue really smiles, too.
No, he smiles. He's got some smiles.
A little bit at the beginning, but.
Well, I think.
Okay, maybe it's.
I think Mr. Blue is having a blast. I mean, this is his forte, from that perspective. So,
you bring up a good point. I think you're right. I think he's actually enjoying this.
Yes. Yeah. Because again, whether we believe what he's talked about, that the life of a mercenary or the opportunities for mercenary have dried up. If that's the case, then he's basically looking for some way to get back those thrills of of what he might have had before. So I'm not too I think that he feels he has nothing to lose here by doing this. Thinks it's a foolproof plan. And again, I always mention this. I always envy people who get to watch these type of movies for the first time. Because will they be able to catch some of the twists beforehand, or are they nicely surprised by them and stuff like that? For you and I, who've seen this movie, so many times, you do find little things here and there, but the overall plot isn't surprising at all.
Yeah, there's nothing like the first time. This is one of those movies where there's nothing like the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes me wish I was talking about the last minute.
True. The last minute with the sneeze you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had the opportunity of choosing what you wanted, and you chose this one.
I know, I know. But, you know, talking about it has made me think about other great things about it, you know, narratively and
Okay,
stuff.
again, if you want to,
I'm still happy.
mention to me about it, you can at this point. It's perfectly okay. I mean, this is not a a spoiler-free podcast. Anyone who's listening to this, my assumption is that they've seen this movie. And they know everything that's going to happen.
I just remember the first time, you know, watching this, and you know, Mr. Green sneezing a few times, and Garber saying "Gesundheit," and just not really thinking it was any major thing until that final scene. And it's like, oh, whoa, that was amazing! He almost got away with it.
Actually, that even makes me wonder how often, they even say Gesundheit in the novel. If that's like part of the whole thing. Nope, there is no Gesundheit in there. I wonder if he had a cold, or if it was something, or if it was something that
God, it's been so long.
no, they have the mayor sneezing. Yeah, that's it. Just the
Well,
mayor sneezes here in the novel, based on the quick
I
start.
remember Mr. Green did do something at the end that had Garber coming back and saying surprise. But I don't remember if it was a sneeze or not.
Well, the word surprise appears many, many times in this novel. Towards the end.
I think it's this book where that was the last sentence of the book was surprise, Garber said, or something like that.
No, there is a surprise at the end, but it's something else.
Okay, I'm just, the mind goes fuzzy after a while. Maybe I should reread the book.
Well, I have an electronic copy if you're interested in reading. Unless you have a
A
copy.
what?
An electronic copy.
I get,
A PDF. I have a PDF of it.
yeah, sure. That'd be great.
Yeah, again, the last word of the novel is surprise, yes. I will leave it at that because I'm going to wait until the very end to talk about what actually happens there, because it's something completely different than what happens in the movie. So
Okay.
that I don't want to spoil right now for everybody. Anybody who's interested, you have was it 55 days? So was it 11 weeks to read the novel to try and catch what happens at the end before I mention it. So.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, but as you said, he smiles really big here. Even though I do believe that he's enjoying this, this might be the first time that he's laughing, as opposed to, looking at it from a very serious perspective as to what he's going on.
Yeah.
And then the scene changes, and we once again get to see a police car. An unmarked police car flying through the city, traveling downtown this time. I think they're on the FDR drive, but I'm not 100% sure. And then we see Phil, the police commissioner, talking on his radio, goes, "Harry, I'm on my way to headquarters." And he goes, "Yeah, we got the green lights." And then the borough commander, the borough chief, says, "Green light. Jesus, Phil, that's great news. The men are raring to go." Which I love this because it's basically
Me
saying
too.
that the green light is okay, we're going in.
I know. I like that's. I love that line, and the guy who played him, Kenneth MacMillan. I mean, he just. I don't know a lot about him. I mean, I've seen him in a lot of things. Most people probably best remember him from Dune. But he just seems like a typical New York cop there. You
That's
know,
right.
yeah, to hell with those guys. Let's go in, guns blazing.
That's right.
And he pretty much sums up what all the cops want to do.
That's right. Because he says the men are raring to go. Not I want to go. It's the men.
Yeah.
We want to help out the men. That's the important thing here.
Hostages be damned.
That's
And the
right.
disappointment on his face when Daniels
That's right.
tells him, no, we're going to pay the ransom.
Not
Like, ah.
Daniels, the commissioner.
Oh, Commissioner, excuse me. Thank you. The disappointment on his face is just is priceless, you know.
That's right. Because he's got a huge smile on it, and then Bill goes, no, put in the ransom money. Pass the word along to the hijackers. And he just like looks at his radio and goes, Roger. You know, like, I don't really want to be doing this, but all right, fine.
And McMillan is only in a couple of scenes, but he
Yes.
makes them count. And I won't go into detail about the other scenes, but he does a great job of summing up the mood of the city and the attitude of the police. And in a few small role, small lines or short lines, he does a great job just expressing that frustration. With a few scenes and a few lines of dialogue, he sums up the attitude of the police in general. So.
No, I think it's great. I mean, again, we've talked about this numerous times over the past few weeks, but the character actors in this movie are just great because they all really do personify New York, and they make us feel that we're immersed completely in this whole New York atmosphere of 1974. You know, so I like the way that they do that. And then the borough chief, then I don't know how he somehow just changes the sorry, he puts his sorry, what he does now is he puts the radio back in the car, and then he takes out a I guess a portable radio from that point, and then he says, Bureau Commander, to the 28th Street platform, come in, Daniels. Daniels, do you read me? And then we get to see who Daniels is, and this is Daniels. And then we hear, as Inspector Daniels is, they give him a CB radio, and you can see that the guy who's next to him is basically walking around with the radio on him. You know, this is again, it's a portable radio from the 1970s. You know, where you have one of your underlings carrying around, lugging around this huge radio in order for you to be able to have a conversation.
Back in the day when your electronics could kill a man.
That's right. And then they what he then says is, we hear Harry say over the radio, pass the word along. The mayor's agreed to pay. Let the hijackers know right away, will ya? And Danny goes, Roger. And then he gives his CB to the guy who's holding it. And then he walks a little bit. And then he reaches into the train itself in order to take another radio in order. And then, to get in touch with Garber. Now, I love the fact that, we have the police commissioner talking on one phone to the borough commander. The borough commander answers him, picks up a different phone, calls Daniels. Daniels puts down that phone and picks up another phone. Here we have you have the game of telephone, but it's with four different cops, and each of them
Gotta
has to
love that.
use a different type of, a different type of system in order to get in touch. You'd think that if the commissioner just got in touch with Garber, that would have been simplest.
You gotta love that 70s technology. But it also does something about the pace of that scene too. Because one thing that this film, I mean, it's extremely well edited, and the fact that they're changing from one person and one radio to another, it keeps that pace, moving, keeps it jumping.
And it does it really well too. And I mean, even when Daniels is walking, he's just taking a few strides. After he walks out of the train to go to to the conductor's car to take out, or the driver's car, take out the other radio, we see like three SWAT guys run by, and it's also, it's very funny looking at the way that these SWAT guys are dressed up in, in 1974.
Yeah. For sure. And, the whole thing.
Actually, they look like stormtroopers.
Yeah, kind of.
With the way their helmets are, just like that. Wow. Yeah.
But, it gives the viewer the impression that they're watching a lot more action than what's really going on.
That's right. And I think that's part of the idea here also, is they want things to feel very busy. There's a lot going on. There's, this isn't something that's so simple. So, yeah, I like the way they do that. And then, Daniels then talks and he goes, do you read me? He goes, command center, this is 20th Street. And then we get a shot of the command center where there's a lot of chattering going on. People are making a lot of noise. And he goes, do you hear me, command center? And Garber like walks across the room to get to the radio and goes, this is command center. Who is this? And he goes, Chief Inspector Daniels. He goes, the mayor's agreed to pay. Pass it on to the hijackers right away. He goes, will do, sir. And then Garber, sits down at the desk and goes, Palom 123, come in. Palom 123. And that's where he gets cut off here, as he's trying to get in touch with Blue to pass on yet another person, trying to put the information to, get, this is like, again, the fifth person in the game of telephone. What do you know about the police rank in New York City of a chief inspector?
I know almost nothing.
Okay. Well, the truth is it's actually been changed. It was known as chief inspector, and then it was changed to chief of operations. And then now it's the known as the chief of department.
I did not know that.
So they things have changed over the years. I remember reading a series of books back in the 90s about like the police department in it was, what's his name, W.E.B. Griffin, and I'm pretty sure it was him, and he wrote about the police department in I think Philadelphia, and the characters were all like inspectors and chief inspector and stuff like that. And it was a very strange concept to me to hear the name chief of inspector and stuff like that, because for me inspector was always Inspector Clouseau, someone in England or in France or somewhere in Europe. It wasn't in the U.S. But apparently it is. Apparently there are places where it works. Where do you think the rank is? Like how far down from the from like the commissioner or chief of police or stuff like that?
I would guess he's probably second in
command. How many levels down?
Maybe one level down.
Okay. According to what I found, it's actually it's four levels down.
Oh.
You have the top level is either chief of police, commissioner, superintendent, or sheriff, depending on where you are, stuff like that. Below that, you'll have assistant chief of police, under sheriff, assistant commissioner, or assistant superintendent. Below that, you have the deputy chief of police, which is also known as either the deputy commissioner, deputy superintendent, chief deputy, assistant sheriff, things like that. And then you have what is known as the inspector or the commander. And it's basically analogous to a brigadier general. The inspector is also used as a term for detectives in different places. An inspector in the NYPD commands divisions, which may be groups of precincts within a borough or specialized branches of the police service.
Which
means that Daniels is still below the borough chief. McMillan is above him.
Well, I learned something new today. I didn't think I would.
There you go. You didn't think you would? Oh, come on. You have to have a little more faith in me. I'm going to make sure you learn something new. If you don't learn something new every day when you listen to the show, then you're not paying enough
Okay.
attention. Even I learn new things, And that's the way that this particular minute ends. Is there anything else you wanted to add about this minute?
I think I talked about everything I was planning on talking about with this scene. So.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, I'm going to qualify this by saying the movie he was nominated for an Oscar for, A Man for All Seasons, is not on my list because I've never seen it. It's on my list of shame.
Because you have five better ones.
It's on my list of shame. It's one of those movies, I've always meant to get around to seeing, but just somehow never did.
You do know that there's a way to rectify that.
Watch it.
Just saying. Just saying. Exactly.
I'll get there eventually. Number five is From Russia with Love. On this side of the pond, this Bond film was most people's introduction to Robert Shaw. And he's terrific as a Spectre assassin. He doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but he's got great screen presence. I love the introduction to him in this movie. It's both funny and intimidating. Number four, The Sting. It takes a lot to hold your own against the star power of Redford and Newman, but Shaw makes a great villain in this one, even though he's essentially a straight man to their antics. Number three, to me, this is one of his most underrated performances, and that's Black Sunday. I think this was the first or second movie he made after Jaws. Might have been the third.
Well, Black Sunday came out in 77. If I remember correctly, he had already died by the time Black Sunday came out, even though he had filmed it before he had died.
He died
I think so.
he died in 1980, and Black Sunday came out
He
in
died
nine.
in 80?
I
You
bl
sure?
pretty
For some
sure.
reason, I thought he died. I thought he died before that. I thought he died
No,
in 77 or 78.
no, I don't think so. I
He died in
think
78. He died in 78.
78. Okay, but I saw this in
Okay, so Black Sunday did come out
77.
before he died. Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
I remember sneaking into it because it was R-rated. But yeah, I think he was really good, and it's somewhat similar to his Mr. Blue performance, where he's very cold and calculating.
Yeah, but then in Black Sunday, he's a good guy,
He's a good
so
guy,
a little different.
yeah. Shows signs of weakness when he lets his guard down. That movie was,
Especially in the hospital.
yeah, that movie was unfairly categorized by a lot of people as a disaster movie, which it isn't. It's a good thriller. Second is Jaws. It's the greatest movie of all time. I don't think it's his greatest performance. I still think no one else could have done it. It's hard to imagine anyone else in these three roles. I know Spielberg originally wanted Sterling Hayden to play Quentin. I can kind of see that, but no one can play him like Shaw. But I still think Shaw was best in the taking of Pelham 1-2-3. That's where I thought he was the most effective. So that would be my list.
Okay, that is a great list. Thank you very much for that. I like it. I like All right, so we will once again play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around the wheel goes.
One for one so far.
Okay, this is a movie that the original came out in 1922,
Oh, Jesus.
and the remake came out in 2024. Okay.
Okay.
And
Nosferatu.
it's about, there you go. I didn't even need to give you
Took me a second.
any hints on that one. Yes.
Both of them very good movies.
Exactly. I like the original better, but the remake is pretty good. Again, it's I'm not a fan of remakes in general, so it's hard to convince me that a remake will be better. There are rare instances that have happened, over the decades where that has happened.
Of course, yeah.
But I still, in general, I would say that there are more movies that are remade that I don't like as well as the originals than the opposite.
I
You know, like
would.
a prime example of one that a prime example of one of the ones that I really like is The Man Who Knew Too Much. You know, I think that the remake from in 56 is much better than Hitchcock's original version of it.
I would agree with that, yeah.
But when I look at the list of most of the movies that have been remade, it's hard to categorize many of them as something that's better than the original. But again,
I would agree
I
with
still
that.
would like to see better ones. So, okay, excellent. So, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at freekittensmovieguide.com, where we write about physical media and occasionally essays about movies from the past.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, and you can, if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, achoo!
Zoonite.